broadcasting on the internet and at 90.1 FM from high atop Burnaby Mountain. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.
From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor, voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Today, after years of study, a scientific panel publicly defines the Anthropocene, naming the spot where humanity's fingerprints are best observed in the rock record.
So now is the time to reveal the winning candidate site. And it is Crawford Lake, Ontario.
A Canadian geologist relishes the moment.
It was the day that we actually thought might never come. We're hoping for a bigger day if the Subcommission on Quaternary, the International Commission on Stratigraphy, and ultimately the IUGS votes in favor of the proposal that we're currently working on to establish the Anthropocene as a formal unit of geologic time and the Crawfordian as its first age.
And a First Nations elder reflects on the wake of her dreams and memories.
At some point, they should stop taking samples from the lake. I believe, as many Indigenous people do, that the lake contains a living spiritual energy that needs to be protected.
This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. Before diving in, a request. Help us deliver this weekly package of Earth news. Subscribe and or donate at greenplanetmonitor.net. Planet Earth. We humans tend to think of it as ours to do with as we please. Over the past two centuries, that's exactly what humans have done. Humanity's transformation of Earth's atmosphere, land surface, and oceans has a name, the Anthropocene. Dutch chemist Paul Crutzen and American biologist Eugene Sturmer coined the term a quarter century ago. Last week, at a geology conference in Lille, France, a scientific panel presented their formal definition of the Anthropocene, when it began, how it should be ranked in the official geological timescale, and where human impacts are best observed in the rock record. The panel's proposed location? A little lake in southern Ontario. To be more precise, the Anthropocene's proposed prototype is a 2-centimeter segment of a long core pulled from the bottom sediments Crawford Lake in Milton, Ontario, an hour's drive west of Toronto. Crawford Lake sediments, as it happens, have been studied for years. Back in the 1970s, paleontologists pinpointed corn pollen there, dating back to the 14th and 15th centuries, the legacy of Indigenous people who lived along the lake's shores, cultivating their three sisters, corn, beans, and squash. Above those corn pollen grains, in layers dating to the mid-20th century, Anthropocene researchers have pinpointed the fingerprints of less benign human activity. Spheroidal carbonaceous particles from high-temperature coal burning and radioactive plutonium from thermonuclear weapons tests that peaked in the mid-1950s. That distinct layer is now being put forward as the Global Stratotype Section and Point, or GSSP, marking the base of the Crawfordian stage and a new epoch, the Anthropocene, thereby terminating the one we've been in for the past 12,000 years, the Holocene. The more popular name for a GSSP, a golden spike. This past Tuesday, at the 4th Congress of the International Commission on Stratigraphy in Lille, two members of the Anthropocene Working Group presented their results. Colin Waters is the first you'll hear. He's the chair of the working group, set up by a subcommission of the ICS back in 2009. Francine McCarthy follows. McCarthy is a geologist at Brock University and the scientific director of Team Crawford. This is technical stuff. Listen closely.
I was asked if I could present the results of the Anthropocene Working Group vote on the GSSP candidate selection and also the rank of the Anthropocene. That's formal voting that we've been doing over the last few months. So, the voting. First of all, the procedure itself involved 12 teams coming forward to us asking us if they could prepare and develop a proposal. And we asked each of the teams to produce a publication which went into the Anthropocene Review. It's all available in volume 10, part 1, as a open access, so you can see all of the papers. We used that procedure as an initial vetting as to whether the sites were suitable as potential candidate GSSPs. And three of the sites were deemed to be more suitable as reference sections. So we didn't include those in the voting. The remaining sites, the remaining nine sites, then went forward to the voting procedures. It's the standard formal ICS protocols for doing these votes. So round one concluded on the 17th of December last year. Of the nine sites, only four received votes for their preference within the 23 voting members of the Anthropocene Working Group. And you can see that Crawford Lake received the majority of the votes, well, most of the votes, however, nowhere near the 60% supermajority that's required for a formal approval. We decided that of the four that received votes, we would then go for the next round of voting to have the top three. And so the second round of voting concluded on the 20th of February of this year. Again, Crawford Lake had 11 votes out of the 23, wasn't at the 60% required level. You can see that Sihanoukville was, if anything, creeping up a little bit. It was, the difference between the two was closing. So we decided to have a further round of voting just between Crawford Lake and Sihanoukville Lake. And I can announce that during round three, which concluded on the 19th of April of this year, that Crawford Lake received 14 votes, which gives it the 60.9% or greater than 60% supermajority. So this meant that Crawford Lake was our preferred site for the host for the GSSP. Now, during that first round of voting, we also asked the voting members of the working group for their formal decision as to what was the rank of the Anthropocene. And of the 23 votes, 22 supported the concept of this being at epoch or series level with its corresponding stage. So consequently, our proposal is for an Anthropocene epoch or series and of a Crawfordian age and stage. Now, this is still work in progress in the respect of we also now have to develop a choice of what our standard Coltellurian boundary satisfacts will be. So of the eight remaining sites, having already chosen Crawford as the GSSP candidate, we have eight remaining sites. We are currently voting on the selection of which of those will be our candidate SABSs. Another aspect which Francine will probably be talking about in her presentation is the precise level within the Crawford core that the position of the GSSP will be located. And there's a discussion about whether it should be at the level 1950, where there's a lithological change, as opposed to the primary marker, plutonium signal, as to whether we use the uptick on that.
It's nice to be able to say out loud in public that this is the site that was voted as the best potential GSSP to define the Anthropocene. I'm going to try and tell you a little bit about the site and tell you why I think it is the best site for that distinction. So this is the location of Crawford Lake in Canada. It's fairly close to the U.S. border. There are three international airports within an hour and a half reach of the site. So in terms of accessibility, it's very accessible on this. Martin mentioned earlier today his site wasn't wheelchair accessible, but mine is. So there you go. It's even wheelchair accessible with a boardwalk around the lake. You can just see a little bit of the boardwalk there. It is a sinkhole in Silurian rocks of the Niagara Escarpment, and it is extremely deep in the north end. You can just see that in this little cartoon of the bathymetry. And it is that great depth relative to its circumference that makes it meromictic, so that the waters don't fully mix. So it's about 2.4 hectares and
roughly 24 meters deep in the deepest point. So it is Myrmictic, and that is a key feature. One of the things that our site did, and we really focused a lot on this, is characterizing the depositional environment and understanding how it is that the annual layers accumulate, so that we would be able to say, yes, they will continue to accumulate in the future, and this is how they form, this is how they're characterized. So it's particularly my students who did a lot of this work, but you can see, I'm not going to repeat all the data here, but you can see that there is this darker gray layer, that's the monomolymnion. There is a chemocline, the waters here do not mix in any way with the waters above. The only way that there is any connection is material that falls slowly through the water column. It does slow down a bit here because of the density contrast, but it eventually does sink to the lake bed and accumulates as annual layers or varves, as Colin referred earlier. You can see the difference in the monomolymnion and the waters above. Clear waters, very murky waters, lots and lots of differences in the water column, elemental differences, physical differences. And the reason for those differences is in part because we have essentially a sinkhole that is essentially below here entirely groundwater fed. So this is a mix of meteoric and groundwater. This is entirely groundwater, and you can see that there are groundwater flow zones that enter that sinkhole, continue on the other side, but it is, this water is basically well water. So we understand then the system in which our varves accumulate, and our varves consist of calcite crystals that cap everything else that falls through that water column the rest of the year, and these calcite crystals only form in the summer months. And there is the very tight window of the required temperature and the required pH in order to precipitate calcite crystals, the little calcite crystals cartoon there, and they fall slowly and they snow onto the bottom of the lake, which for the rest of the year accumulates almost 100% organic matter. Most of that is orthogenic. So the other funky feature of our lake, and it is the only Myrmictic lake that I've been able to find in the literature whose bottom waters, or monomolymnion, is not anoxic. So the bottom waters are well oxygenated, and it turns out that it seems to be a refugium every winter where the little microscopic animals choose to go and hang out through the winter months and chow down on all the organic matter and detritus that's down there. So as Colin mentioned earlier, there is this great acceleration of human activity that the Anthropocene Working Group chose as, well, identified as the point in recent history where the activities of humans are best recorded in the geologic record. So when Paul Crutzen first coined the term, the idea was initially it'd be the Industrial Revolution, but in terms of a globally synchronous record, it turns out that this great acceleration in the mid-20th century post-World War II is the better signal. And so when Martin first stopped by my door to ask me if I thought that Crawford Lake might not be a good potential candidate, they were looking for possible candidates, I said, yeah, absolutely, because of, you know, the varving and so on, but no one had ever really looked in detail at the 20th century. It's just at very low resolution because people were really focused down here. And down here is a really interesting story that I'm not going to get sidetracked on, but it is the record of indigenous agriculture, agricultural settlement, longhouses, Three Sisters agriculture, that initially altered the chemistry of lake water sufficiently to allow varves to form, to allow that calcite to accumulate in sufficient amounts to make a white layer that is really easy to count, like tree rings, so that we have varve counts. So having agreed to take this on, we went out onto the ice surface, which is the easiest way to do it, and took quite a number of freeze cores in February 2019. In addition to freeze coring, there were various other kinds of coring activity taking place, not all just freeze coring, and we also did some of our water analyses at that time. So the cores look like this. They are beautiful, laminated, annually laminated or varved cores. There is a very sharp color change here that dates back to 1870, has to do with logging around the area and lumber mill activity. There is a very, very clear, so that is what we would call the base of the Anthracene here. There's a very clear couplet of dark layers separated by a triplet of bright white varves. Makes it easy to characterize, to correlate across the basin, and to very quickly put your finger on that line, which for a GSSP is a nice thing to have. So again, images of the core, right there at about 12 and a half centimeters in that core would be where we put the base of the Anthracene. You can here, see here in the ultra high resolution imagery, again, picking out that base of that dark unit, when you have very high resolution imagery, you can actually resolve those white layers that are capping each year. So they're not, if they were purely black, our varving would fall apart. But in fact, when you look at it under high resolution, you can count each and every year. So there were a number of cores taken in 2019, and they form the backbone of our bid, if you will, our paper that was submitted to the Anthracene Review. Key here are the plutonium, the SCPs or fly ash particles, nitrogen, and here are some diatom data that I'll mention briefly in a minute. But the thing is that we see this initial rise in plutonium, we see the sharp rise in SCPs, we see the decline in nitrogen isotopes. All of these are Anthracene markers. So these are markers of combustion of fossil fuels, industrial activity, nitrogen fertilizers. And this is the best marker of something that is anthropogenic. Plutonium-239-240 don't occur naturally, falling back, falling out of the atmosphere, falling to the planet, synchronously around the world. So it makes for a very good chronological marker. It's it is in a sense the great acceleration, but it's really more as a chronological marker that we use this. But the things that really record the combustion of fossil fuels, the expansion of human activity and the number of humans doing those activities is recorded in chemical changes in the water that then translate into biotic changes in the fossil assemblages that we see. And I'm going to show you a couple of slides where biotic changes, these are siliceous microfossils, they include chrysophytes and diatoms, and there is a very clear transition in the assemblages there. And remember, this was my nice panel that I showed you earlier. And the changes that you see are where we go from having these nice, relatively thick varves with nice, thick, white calcite layers to these areas where it's difficult to discriminate the individual years unless you look carefully under high resolution. And there are those triplets that separate those two darkish units. Colin mentioned acidification, and that's in fact what's happening here. So the unchecked emissions of spheroidal carbonaceous particles together with the gases coming out of the stacks in particularly in the steel mills in Hamilton, which is a large industrial city just upwind from this area, resulted in the slight acidification of this dolomitic basin. So it didn't actually become acidic, just became less basic. And remember at the very beginning I showed you the very tight window of pH that's required for substantial precipitation of calcite in the surface water. So it became marginal for those years. But as I said, it is discernible, which is important for our resolution. The geochemistry, we see evidence of chemical change in the water column, more ferruginous elements and more industrial pollution. And when we look at the SCPs, very clearly they increase in abundance. And these things that we see in my pollen slides, together with the SCPs that we see in our pollen slides as well, these are algae that live deep in the water column, whose acid-resistant remains I see in my pollen slides. So the Dinobryon loricae are these little guys that you can barely see here, and this is Caratella quadrata, featured on one of Colin's slides, and this is Botryococcus. So these algae don't have flagella, they don't have ways to go move up and down the water column like dinoflagellates do. They need to have really good light penetration. So the connection there is acidification, less calcite, not no calcite, but less calcite, less reflection back to space, more light penetrates deeper in the water column. So that's what we see in the water column. So we see that in these algae. We see that in these algae. These are algae as well. So that change, which is local, it is a water chemistry change, but it is due to the atmospheric changes that are due to the activities of humans. So locally here, this is how it is expressed biotically, geologically, hydrologically. So all of the Earth systems are being driven by the atmospheric changes. Yes, and so what we also see in the same 2011 core, the pollen, we see a decline in elm. And you probably know Dutch elm disease struck the area, and so big changes. We were out of sediment. We needed to have a core archived that maybe a brass plaque would end up in as GSSP. So the following winter, we tried the following winter, it was COVID. Two winters later, we had safe ice, no COVID restrictions, so we recovered two additional cores. One of these we suggested as the GSSP. We measured a number of different parameters, proxies, in that core. This is what the plutonium curve looks like. This is what the SCP curve looks like. This is the peak in cesium-137. So it's all nice and consistent. And this is the facility where the GSSP candidate core one is. Perhaps there'll be a different one when we propose, depending on the 1950 or 52 or 3 decision, but that is where we are, that is the very secure location where the cores are residing. And I want to thank the rest of my team, which is not just me, and the indigenous people who worked with us in order to, who allowed us to investigate the lake yet again.
Francine McCarthy is a geologist at Brock University in St. Catharines, Ontario, and the scientific director of Team Crawford. Colin Waters is the chair of the Anthropocene Working Group, set up in 2009 to study the Anthropocene's formalization. I'll post links to a few technical papers the working group has produced at greenplanetmonitor.net. The definition it's now proposing, centering on the Crawford Lake GSSP, will need to be ratified by the body that commissioned it, the Subcommission on Quaternary Stratigraphy. If that happens, the proposal will move up to the International Commission on Stratigraphy, then to the Supreme Arbiter of All Matters Geological, the International Union of Geological Sciences. At each stage, supermajority approval will be required. The proposal's future is anything but certain. You are listening to the Green Planet Monitor. If you're appreciating what you're hearing, go to greenplanetmonitor.net and subscribe, or donate, or both. With your generous help, we'll keep delivering stories about planet Earth, human development, justice, and science to listen to, read, and watch. Last week's proposed definition of the Anthropocene may come as a surprise to some. Aren't we already in the Anthropocene, ordinary people ask? Not according to those who govern Earth's official time scale, the International Chronostratigraphic Time Chart. Judging from the public comments of ranking geologists, the Anthropocene Working Group's formal definition, announced last week in Lille, France, may well wither on the geo-bureaucratic vine. If it does, a whole lot of hard-working geologists will be crestfallen. The Anthropocene Working Group's 38 members have been laboring on their proposal for over a decade. Then there are the geologists, geochemists, and other specialists associated with the dozen candidate sites originally in the running for the Anthropocene's Golden Spike, hundreds of them. Among these, no one has worked harder than the scientific director of the winning candidate, Francine McCarthy. McCarthy is a geologist at Brock University in St. Catharines, Ontario. I spoke with her the morning after the big announcement. Yesterday was a big day. It was the day you were waiting for really years.
It was the day that we actually thought might never come. And it's a big day. It's not the biggest day. We're hoping for a bigger day if the Subcommission on Quaternary, the International Commission on Stratigraphy, and ultimately the IUGS votes in favor of the proposal that we're currently working on to establish the Anthropocene as a formal unit of geologic time and the Crawfordian as its first age. We have a little bit of work left to do to decide on very specifically the point in that core. It'll make a 2 to 3 millimeter difference, perhaps, to our proposal, which is 1950. So there's an article published in Anthropocene Review, a special volume that has the guts, the detailed, very detailed scientific information from 9 of the 12 initial sites, the 9 who felt they had a shot. And so Crawford Lake is one of those. And in the article, we propose 1950, which is a round number, and it is the present in before present that you get from radiocarbon dating agencies because of the artificial radiocarbon produced since then. So it seemed logical to us to propose 1950. But the question is, stratigraphically, should we go with a year of convenience and resonance, or should we go with something with quote-unquote stratigraphic reality, which, as I said, in our core will be 2 to 3 millimeter difference, but that's fine. It will be whatever the majority of the Anthropocene Working Group decides in a vote that we will have after a discussion period. Once the brand new plutonium analyses are in at annual resolution, and then there will be no error bar around the point of inflection to the rapid increase, then it will be, we will know, and so it'll either stay at 1950 or it will be 1952 or 1953, and which of those 2 years we will be able to pronounce on once the data are in from Vienna.
You're saying that your attempts so far at the Anthropocene Working Group's attempts to interact with the body that asked you to do what you set out to do, the Subcommission on Quaternary.